Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
Recent research shows the use of cover crops by farmers is good for our water and doesn't impact corn or soybean production. Let's go in depth with Liz Jukums with the Iowa State Extension Office. Well, Liz, I understand that you have some new research out on cover crops. Can you sort of give us the basics?
Absolutely. We're really excited about this new research report that we have out on our website. It's looking at 5 years of cover crop research conducted on Iowa State University Outreach Research Farms. So they're located across the state of Iowa. And at each site, we set up plots in both corn and soybeans where we looked at how a single species cover crop compared to a mixtures cover crop to a no cover crop to measure different impacts on yield, on water quality, and overall just how are these different species of cover crops performing across the state of Iowa.
This is really important research. I mean, this the use of nitrogens, there's a lot of talk about too much getting into our waterways and that there's talk about the potential for cover crops to reduce it. What did you learn?
So we're really excited to see that after collecting water samples from a 2-foot depth biweekly, so every other week from April to November, we saw a significant reduction in nitrate concentrations at that rooting depth when cover crops were present. So in our plots that we used cereal rye, so this would be ahead of a soybean crop, we had cereal rye on its own as the single species, and then we also had a mixture with rye, rapeseed, and radish. And for those two treatments compared to the no cover, we saw a 61% reduction in nitrate concentration for the single treatment of rye and a 48% reduction in the single treatment, in the mixture treatment with the rye, radish, and rapeseed. So that's a pretty exciting reduction because the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy goals is about 41% nitrate reduction. So this is clearly showing that winter sewer rye is going to be a great tool for helping us reach those goals. And we're also excited to see that even in our plots ahead of corn where we seeded species that did not overwinter, so that would be oats on its own and then a mixture of oats, radish, and hairy vetch, we still saw statistically significant reductions in nitrate concentration for both treatments, so a 23% reduction with the oats on their own and a 19% reduction with the oats mixture. So clearly the fall growth of those cover crops are still taking up and retaining nitrate. And then for our overwintering species like rye, we get that added bonus of uptake in the spring that can help significantly retain nitrate within the field.
Okay, so bottom line, what's the recommendation that you're making?
So ultimately, we're recommending using either rye or oats. For those just getting started with cover crops, we're recommending rye ahead of soybeans and oats ahead of corn as they get a chance to figure out how to get that rye properly terminated. You get a little bigger window when you're following it with soybeans than you do with corn in the spring to get it terminated. But as they build up comfort with getting that rye terminated, we've seen from another study that we've done for the last 10 years with farmer partners that there are no yield penalties or issues for using cereal rye ahead of corn either. The caveat, something to keep in mind, is that you are changing your cropping system, so there's going to be some changes to the management that's going to be needed. And by that, we mean adjusting planter settings to make sure that your furrow is getting opened, you get the seeding depth you're interested in, and that you get that furrow closed back up so that you get a good germination stand of your cash crop. So the other thing is just making sure you're getting that cover crop properly terminated. So to do that typically is with glyphosate, and it's done 7 to 10 days ahead of corn if you've got an overwintering species, and at the time of planting for soybeans. And so your best results for termination with herbicide is when you have, again, an actively growing plant, so that means daytime temperature is around 60 and nighttime temperature staying at about 40 so that that plant can translocate that herbicide and get terminated effectively.
More in depth after this.
I I continued my conversation about cover crops with Liz Jukums with the Iowa State Extension Office. Is the herbicide a downside to the cover crop?
So typically, on a no-till operation, producers are already using a burn down that includes a herbicide like glyphosate, so it's not an additional cost or pass for a no-till operation. Just the timing and awareness that you need an actively growing plant to make that the most effective herbicide pass you can.
Now, what's the incentives for farmers to do this? I mean, it sounds like it's the right thing with respect to, you know, our waterways, but economically, it comes with a cost.
That is, yeah, it's a very good point. And so one of the keys is that, you know, we all drink the water. So it's not just those downstream from us, but local producers are also drinking the water that their land is contributing to. But also there's some additional benefits for the landowner, for the producer, in the terms of soil erosion reduction. So you're retaining that soil in the field, helping maintain the productivity and value of that land and that asset in the operation. For some of our more experienced producers, and letting that cereal rye grow a little bit longer in the spring, they've seen some suppression of early season annual weeds. And for livestock producers, for sure, there's the benefit of getting livestock either out there grazing or harvesting that cover crop as a forage crop to help supplement the feeds for their livestock operation.
So that sounds like the best case scenario is to get livestock on those cover crops.
Yeah, that's kind of the best win-win is if you've got some sort of grazing animal, you know, cows or sheep or goats, something you can get out there that can really take advantage of the cover crop that's growing out there. If you've got the fencing, you know, recycling the nutrients as they're consuming it and depositing back into that field. But also the forage aspect is another way to kind of make the dollars and cents really pencil out when it comes to adding a cover crop to the operation.
Well, and even if you don't have livestock, you probably have a neighbor who does that might be interested.
Exactly. You can kind of build up that neighbor partnership there. And also for those that are just getting started, you know, to help offset the risk and maybe concerns that you have, there are cost share programs available both on the federal and state level through the local Natural Resources Conservation Service office, located typically in the county seat of each office or county.
What are some of the other benefits to cover crops?
So we do see an aesthetic benefit to as you drive across the state and you see something green in those brown months out of the year. And that's not necessarily something that's super tangible, but we are also seeing impacts when it comes to soil health, when it comes to our biological aspect of our soil. So we often think about the chemical, the physical, and the biological components of our soil. And one study that we just are wrapping up as well, hopefully have our report out soon, is a 3-year trial looking at earthworm populations in a cover crop versus no cover crop system. And so we went out and we looked for the common night crawler in our long-term cereal rye cover crop plots and some located here near campus as well. And our preliminary results indicate in our no-till strips without earthworms, roughly just under 80,000 earthworms per acre, which is, you know, pretty spectacular. But when we looked at the strips that did have cereal rye, also no-till, we saw over 113,000 earthworms per acre. So doing the quick math, that's about a 40% increase in earthworm populations for the strips with cover versus those without, because you're providing additional residue and food source to our biological creatures that are helping us in the soil as well, helping build up, you know, soil aggregates to help with infiltration, soil stability, as well as providing, you know, a preferred root path for our crops so that they can more easily get established, access water, and stay stronger during the growing season as well.
Well, and then there's the organic matter of the earthworms when they complete
exactly.
their life
cycle. They're helping cycle those nutrients, making it available for them, but also other microorganisms that are helping feed our food web beneath the feet.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about cover crops with Liz Jukums with the Iowa State Extension Office. Is the number of earthworms per acre a general indication of soil health?
Yeah, it's an early indicator, a biological indicator as to how well the soil is doing. One caveat is that because earthworms, the Lumbricus terrestris, is not a native species to Iowa, it's thought to have been brought over by European settlers and potted plants. There is a potential that maybe a field just doesn't have earthworms in it, so it's not necessarily a direct indication of poor management, but if they are present, we tend to see a larger population when cover crops are present versus when it's just a no-till system.
Well, would farmers be smart to introduce earthworms into their fields?
They could. Earthworms tend to make their way into different fields through, you know, various movements, whether it's themselves or potentially manure applications, things like that. But if they would like to, they can certainly introduce some earthworms to their field to help kind of give a jump start to their field and then see if they can see changes over time for that earthworm population with the presence of a cover crop.
Is there farmer resistance to cover crops?
So there's some hesitation when it comes to it. As you mentioned, it is an expense to add a cover crop to the operation, but I like to view it more as an investment in the farming operation. It's not a cost, but an investment. You know, we will get crop insurance, we'll use different seed treatments, things like that to help make sure that we can get that crop to market. So if we view cover crops as an investment in the resource that's helping us get that crop to market instead of just an added expense to the operation, I think that's one way we can help kind of shift the needle and maybe benefit or increase adoption of cover crops across the state.
Well, in looking at the big picture, don't cover crops help reduce the amount of carbon in the atmosphere?
So they're going to be helping retain nutrients within the soil. I honestly am not as familiar with the carbon portion of it. I do know that they are great tools for helping retain and maintain phosphorus and nitrogen within the crop field instead of having it leave the system via waterways.
Okay, so lots of positives with cover crops. Do you have an estimate of what proportion of Iowa farmers use them?
So last year, our estimate was roughly 760,000 acres of cover crops were seeded in 2017. So we'll have to see. Our Iowa Learning Farms year-end evaluation report typically comes out in late January to mid-February, where we have evaluated field days and asked our attendees to share with us how many cover crops that they have planted, and we use that to extrapolate what the state of Iowa's average is for cover crop adoption for the next year. So you can look forward to seeing the 2018 numbers coming out in early 2019.
Well, now, we certainly have listeners that are farmers, and they probably mm-hmm. know what you're talking about. But what's for our non-farmer listeners, what's the most important message that you can convey to them today?
So cover crops are a valuable tool of the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, so it's not the only one, but it's one of the easier ones to implement and to get started with helping reduce nitrogen and phosphorus loss from the agricultural landscape. And it does take an investment both on the part of the producer and through taxpayers, providing help through the cost share programs, but also an investment in the people in the community that are helping these farmers implement cover crops. And so, our watershed coordinators, our NRCS staff, our ISU Extension and Outreach staff that are out there answering those questions, helping them troubleshoot, making sure that they're set up for the best possible success when it comes to using these conservation practices and helping us all have access to clean, safe drinking water and recreational water as well.
And what's the best part of your job?
My best part is that I get to travel the state and interact with farmers, get my hands dirty, and also work with youth as well as we talk about the different ways we can help implement different conservation practices and things we can do on a normal, everyday basis that can all help us protect our natural resources here in the state of Iowa.
Thanks to Liz Jukums for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click Radio Plus. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIA KRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in Marion County is KNIA KRLS.